The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on July 7, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, thanks for coming today. Our practice is to be aware here and now, without expectations and without being caught up in our one-sided, preconceived ideas, assumptions and beliefs. Usually when people start out in Zen practice, they have lots of expectations of gain and improvement, and they're caught up in their preconceived ideas and beliefs about themselves, others, and the nature of reality. They really want to improve themselves, attaining states of mind that they think they're lacking, and gaining the improvements that they think they need to make. And I think Zen practice is a technique to do this. But to truly carry out Zen practice is to be aware. To truly carry out Zen practice is to let go of expectations and preconceived ideas and just be aware here and now. For the sake of being aware here and now, this is to live as we truly are. In this practice, it becomes directly evident that we are living inseparably from all beings. Our true life is the life of all beings functioning together inseparably. Since we're inseparable from all beings, each being we meet is our own life. Realizing this is the basis of compassion. In this practice, it also becomes directly evident that each seemingly separate being is a manifestation of totality here and now, wholeness here and now, universal reality here and now, for the life of all beings here and now. This here and now reality, which is directly experienced here and now, is an all-inclusive reality of wholeness, totality, universality. It is boundlessly great beyond comparison. So all the seemingly separate beings that are manifestations of it are great beyond comparison. Realizing this is the basis of respect for all beings and ourselves beyond our conventional ideas of respect. Kariya Roshi, my teacher, used to say to us sometimes in his lectures, he would point to us and say, "You are great. You are great beyond comparison. You are great in that you're manifestations of this great beyond comparison reality, this all-inclusive reality of here and now." Each seemingly separate being or situation is manifesting totality here and now, or life of all beings here and now, in its own unique way. In our practice of here and now, in our practice of awareness here and now, we try to find the best way to take care of each seemingly separate, uniquely manifesting being or situation that we meet here and now. And there is, you can't really find a rule for how to do this, how we take care of ourselves and the beings that we meet, we find in this practice of awareness. We can get lots of suggestions, lots of ideas about it, but finally, it comes down to the most accurate way of finding how to take care of ourselves and others is in this practice of here and now awareness or awakeness. This practice helps all beings and helps all beings to help us. This practice is to fully live the life of all beings here and now, in which all beings are mutually influencing and assisting each other. All beings are influencing each being, and each being is influencing all beings. And all beings are influencing and helping all beings to be as they are, to live as they truly are. The life of all beings, which is our true life, which is this directly experienced reality of here and now, the life of all being functions and manifests itself in such a way as to bring about the appearance of separation of self and others. This functioning of the life of all beings also brings about the appearance of duration in time and the appearance of extension in space. Conventionally speaking, there seems to be separate individuals, things, and phenomena that persist through time and move through space and interact with each other to cause other separate things to appear and other separate events to take place. Reality seems to be this way. With wholehearted awareness here and now, which is carried out in Zen practice, it can be directly realized that ultimately separation of self and others, duration in time, and extension in space cannot actually be found. We don't actually find separately existing, persisting, substantial beings in our actual direct experience. The appearances of separation of self and other, the appearance of duration in time, and the appearance of extension in space are empty, illusory manifestations of here-now reality or life of all beings. But these appearances are not to be ignored or dismissed. These appearances are how here-now reality shows up. If we ignore these appearances, we're ignoring here-now reality. Conventionally speaking, there seem to be separate beings, times, places, and situations, emotions, thoughts, desires, activities, and events to which names, labels, ideas, personal pronouns, and conceptual categories can be applied. In accordance with how things appear to be, and in accordance with conventional speech, we use names, labels, ideas, personal pronouns, and conceptual categories. We try to get along and communicate in the conventional, seemingly dualistic world where there seems to be separation of self and others without being caught by the one-sided belief that there actually is this separation. In the practice of awareness here and now, we let go of our attachment to any one-sided idea or belief. Even the ideas of oneness or no separation or emptiness or wholeness or totality, we don't hold on to any idea or belief. Just see these ideas as pointers to help us in our investigation of direct here now experience. So We try in our practice to let go of our attachment to any one-sided idea or belief. Then we can be kind and helpful to ourselves and others as we are without being caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs of who and what we are. We can help all the seemingly separate beings without being caught by the one-sided belief that they actually are separate beings. Also, we can take care of the life of all beings, in which all beings are living one inseparable life, without being caught up in a one-sided belief in oneness. Also, we can use ideas and conceptual abstractions without being caught by the belief that here now reality or life of all beings exactly corresponds to these conceptual abstractions. Reality can never be captured in a concept. It can never, our concepts never exactly describe or explain what our life is. But these concepts are very helpful as pointers, giving us suggestions in how we can, as we investigate our direct here now experience. They're very helpful as pointers and in helping us to communicate and point things out to each other. Our practice is to fully live the life of all beings here and now without being caught up in our limited one-sided beliefs and ideas. This is to live as we truly are. When we see we're caught up in our limited one-sided ideas and beliefs, be aware. Resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. In this practice of being aware here and now, our attachment to these ideas and beliefs can naturally drop away and by themselves. And we can live as we truly are, beyond any ideas of who or what we are. But this is a practice we need to carry out each moment, because our old habits die hard. It's very, we are very deeply rooted habitual attachment to belief that reality corresponds to our conceptual models of how it is. So when we find ourselves getting caught up in our concepts, ideas, and beliefs, just resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Our practice is to see and let go of how our true life is ignored and to fully live our true life, which is being directly experienced here and now. This practice helps all beings and helps all beings to help us and helps all beings to help all beings. This is to fully participate and directly experience here now reality as it is and to live as we truly are. Our practice is not a technique to gain something for ourselves, but to fully participate in this reality where all beings are functioning together. And in this practice, we can really, in letting go of how we ignore this reality, we can fully participate in this reality and help all beings and help ourselves. So once again, practice is to be aware here and now, without expectations, to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. But this being aware is not the conventional idea of being aware. Usually we think being aware is something that I am doing. But think I am doing something in particular called being aware. But eventually it can be realized that awareness here and now is what we truly are. And this statement is not an idea to be grasped and believed. This statement as a pointer to help us in our investigation of directly experienced here now reality, and to help us directly realize who we truly are, and to help us directly realize what this practice is. Each being is a manifestation of this awareness or awakeness. The technical term for this awareness or awakeness is Buddha nature. This Buddha nature is also our true life. This Buddha nature is a beginningless, endless, boundless, all-inclusive, subjectless, objectless awareness or awakeness itself. Each being is manifesting this awareness or awakeness in its own unique way. Once again, this is not an idea to be grasped, but a reality to be directly experienced, directly realized. A teacher, Katagiri Roshi, frequently would say, I mention this all the time, he would say, you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. And all beings are Buddha in that all beings are manifestations of Buddha nature. Each being is manifesting this Buddha nature in its own unique way. So ultimately, practice is not a means to become an awakened person or a Buddha. Practice is to be the Buddha or awareness or awakeness that you are right now. And also practice is to respect each being as Buddha beyond our conventional limited ideas of respect and beyond our conventional limited ideas of Buddha. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is the Buddha nature. Our practice is to see and let go of how our Buddha nature is ignored and to fully live as the Buddhas that we are. So this Katagiri Roshi used to mention this in his teaching. He especially in his last lecture before he died of cancer, he emphasized again and again in this lecture, you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. And the Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi, he wrote the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Some of you may be familiar with that book. He was a Japanese Zen master who lived, came to America in 1959 and established the San Francisco Zen Center. He's a very wonderful teacher. And he used to also emphasize that all beings are Buddha. This is something he said in one of his lectures. So Hiroshi used to say, since you are Buddha, you must be Buddha. That is our practice. Our practice is to be what we are. Since our true nature, our true life, our true self is the Buddha nature, our practice is to be the Buddha that we truly are. And in one of his lectures, he said, when it is hot, you should be hot Buddha. When it is cold, you should be cold Buddha. And he went on to say that each individual, each thing, each event, each situation, each experience is Buddha. Each thought, each feeling, each emotion, each desire, each perception, each state of consciousness is Buddha. When you realize that you are Buddha and understand everything as an unfolding of Buddha, then whatever you experience is the actual teaching of Buddha, and whatever you do is the actual practice of Buddha. It's a pretty emphatic statement emphasizing you are Buddha. But once again, Katagiri Roshi and Suzuki Roshi weren't trying to give us an idea to grasp and believe. They were trying to help us give us a suggestion which would help us directly realize our true life as it is beyond any idea of what it is. And in this way of life, being aware here and now, for the sake of being aware here and now, a joyful life is possible. But this is not a joy that we strive to get. It's not an egocentric joy where I feel joyful. And it's not something that we can understand conceptually. It's not something that we can see objectively. This this joy is not something that in our usual idea of joy. This joy is letting go of grasping our egocentric, one-sided ideas and beliefs and fully living out here now reality, fully living as we truly are. This is the joy of living as we are, living in harmony with reality, living in harmony with all beings, to fully participate in this life of all beings, to fully participate in this reality where ultimately we can't find any obstruction, can't find any hindrances. So fully participate in this reality where all beings are helping each other and mutually assisting each other unrestrictedly. But it's not something we can picture conceptually or grasp as an object. It's not something that can be defined, but yet this is the joy of fully participating in our life as it is, which isn't something that can be seen objectively. This is the joy of living without the confusion of being caught up in our egocentric, one-sided views. Usually we live our life in that way. We egocentrically grasp these ideas and live our life based on these egocentric views. And trying to benefit the separate ego self we imagine ourselves to be. Or try to grasp this, some idea of oneness and think that that's what it is. That we grasp that idea and think that's what it is. But this is living inseparably from all beings who are mutually assisting each other beyond any idea of what it is. And this is the joy of having the opportunity at each moment to express our gratitude to all beings. And to express our gratitude to all beings is fully participate in this life of all beings, which is our true life, which can't be grasped conceptually, but is being directly experienced now. To fully participate in this life, where all beings are helping all beings, and each being is helping all beings, to fully participate in that life is to express our gratitude to all beings. But I want to emphasize, this isn't our conventional idea of joy. Our conventional idea of joy is having something to look forward to in the future. We feel joyful about that. Or the joy of being able to satisfy our desires, having that, the joy of satisfying our desires. These are the conventional ways of viewing joy. And the joy that's I'm talking about here is beyond these, the conventional idea of joy, where we anticipate some joyful experience or where we look forward to satisfying our desires. I'll give some examples of conventional ideas of joy. When I was elementary school in the fifth grade, we were told that we were going to get out of school in 2 weeks. We get out of school and we'll be able to go to the circus. And we thought that was great. You know, we thought, well, it'd be great getting out of school, but to be able to go to the circus too, man, that really sounds wonderful. And for the 2 weeks leading up to going to the circus, we, as kids, were always talking about, oh, well, it'd be so great when we get out of school and go to the circus. That'll be so wonderful. We really look forward to this with great joyful anticipation. But when we finally went to the circus, it wasn't that great. You know, we looked at each other. We were expecting this to be such a wonderful show, but it wasn't that great. You know, we just looked at each other and kind of shrugged our shoulders. There was one thing that really amused us kids and we really enjoyed and really busted us up with lots of laughter. And that's when the trained pigs came out. And what was so amusing about the trained pigs was how extremely poorly trained they were. It was really very amusing. Us kids found that incredibly funny. Those pigs just had no sense of decorum at all. I'll leave it to your imagination, all the socially unacceptable things that they were doing. But if we'd known beforehand that seeing these incredibly poorly trained pigs was going to be the highlight of the day, is highly unlikely that we would have looked forward to going to the circus with such joyful anticipation. And there's another example of conventional joy. This involves a story about when I was in eighth grade and I had a metal shop teacher named Mr. Blanchard. We used to call him Mr. B. And Mr. B loved Fridays. He loved Fridays. He called it Joy Supreme Day. And every Friday he would say to us boys, he'd say, "Boys, what day is it today?" And then he'd have us answer him in unison, "It's Joy Supreme Day, Mr. B." And you learn very quickly in Mr. B's class that he'd be much more lenient in grading your metal shop project if you turned it in on Friday. If you turned it in on some other day, he might look at it and say, "I don't think you followed the instructions very well here. This is a pretty sloppy job you did on this metal shop project. You should do it over again." He was very likely to say that if you turned it in on some other day than Friday. But if you turned it in on Friday, he might say, "You know, I like the creative freestyle way you did this project. Really shows a lot of ingenuity. Good going." He really loved Fridays. He never explained to us why. He must have had something really good going on the weekend, but he never explained what it was. Perhaps us boys should have asked him. We could have asked him in unison. We could have said, "Mr. B, why do you find Fridays so joyful?" But we never did ask him that. But it would have been interesting. Well, maybe one reason he was so joyful about it was he was able to look forward to experiencing pleasurable things on Saturday. You know, he could look forward to sleeping late. He didn't have to come down to school and teach us boys, so he could sleep late. And he could satisfy his desire for sleep. Or maybe he could go out for an all-you-can-eat pancake breakfast at the pancake house and satisfy his desire for food, you know. You know, things opened up for him when he didn't have to come teach us boys. So Friday he felt was very joyful because it gave him an opportunity to satisfy his desires on Saturday. And he found that very joyful. So in Buddhism, it is said that there are five desires. The desire for food, the desire for sex, desire for good reputation, the desire for wealth or property, and the desire for sleep. So Mr. B would, because he didn't have to come into work on Saturday, he had a great opportunity to satisfy these desires. The desires I mentioned for sleep and food, and he could work on satisfying his other desires as well. So anyway, but Mr. B never explained why he found Friday so joyful. But I'm thinking that's probably the reason. So, but anyway, these two examples that I gave of anticipating going to the circus Mr. B's joyful anticipation of satisfying his desires on Saturday, these are just my ideas about it. We should have asked Mr. B. He could have maybe come up with some very interesting answers. Well, anyway, do you have any questions about this? I haven't used up much time, have I? Oh, no, that's okay. Any questions any of you have? Or comments?
Didn't Katagiri Roshi say you are all Buddha until you open your mouths or something like that?
That was Suzuki Roshi.
Yeah,
he said one time in a lecture, he pointed out to his audience, he said, I see you all as Buddha until you open your mouths to say something.
And then Katagiri Roshi, didn't he say, or one of them say, but you could all stand some improvement.
Yeah. I think Suzuki Roshi also said that too. He said, you're perfect just as you are. Maybe you could all use some improvement. Yes, fine, Mary.
So you came from the San Francisco Zen Center, right?
In San Francisco.
And you practiced under Suzuki Roshi?
Right, and Katagiri Roshi was there too.
Oh, yeah. Can you just talk a little bit more about some of those experiences?
Yeah, they were really wonderful people. Both of them had a very joyful presence about them. It was just fun to listen to them, even though in the beginning, especially for Katagiri Roshi, his English wasn't so good. And he would make lots of bloopers, but still, just listening to him, even though he was making all these mistakes, was because he had such a joyful presence and joyful attitude. How he presented the teaching, it was a wonderful experience to hear him talk. And Suzuki Roshi, it took him a while to get really good at English too. But by the time I got there, he was pretty good, and he was so good that he would sometimes make jokes in English, and he would sometimes talk about himself as being a henpecked husband, and And let's see what else. Then he sometimes use the American expression, talking about his wife, I can't live with her, but I can't live without her. And then he would sometimes say, his wife she had fun using English expressions too. And she, one time, people went to Sazen early in the morning, and Mrs. Suzuki appeared at the window and said, Sazen is canceled today. Suzuki Roshi died. And the students were saying, oh no, Suzuki Roshi died. Oh no, that's terrible. Oh my goodness. But then Mrs. Suzuki said, April Fool, American expression. So they had lots of joyful, humorous things that they did, but also they're very dedicated to practice. And they really wanted to help us, because they saw how ignorant we were. And, they were very sincere about it, and very kind and very helpful. Trying to think of another example here. Well, it's not coming right away. So, yeah, thank you. Anything else? Well, thank you all for coming today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.